I think telehealth is here to stay.
Captain Integrity Production and the law firm of Nelson Mullins presents Stark Integrity, the Stark Law and Compliance Podcast. Stark Integrity explores the world of the Stark Law and healthcare compliance with our nationally recognized Stark Law, Fraud, and Compliance attorney, Bob Wade. Bob has a national healthcare, legal, and compliance practice that focuses on the minions of the Anti-Kickback Statute, False Claims Act, and the Stark Law, including fair market value and commercial reasonableness. Although Bob is a law partner in the national law firm of Nelson Mullins, the views expressed in Stark Integrity are Bob's personal views and not the views of the firm, and they are not intended to be legal advice. Now, without further ado, I give you Captain Integrity, Bob Wade.
Welcome to Stark Integrity, the Stark Law and Compliance Podcast. My name is Bob Wade, and I am your host. Well, in my practice, I have been receiving a lot of questions regarding telehealth, and I'm assuming that a lot of you have had questions regarding telehealth. Well, I made a journey north to Alaska, and I think that's a song, North to Alaska. And I met our presenter today, that she and I are going to have a great conversation regarding telehealth and the impact on the healthcare industry. Just from a coding perspective, is there some type of modifier? I'm asking you a question, I have no idea, but is there some type of modifier that goes on the claim so that the payer knows that this was a telehealth visit versus an office visit?
That's a great question, because during the public health emergency, it seemed like the guidance for coding and billing changed almost daily. And what they settled on was that we would report the place of service during the public health emergency that the patient would have usually been seen at. And that was for payment purposes, because in an office setting, when a doctor has a brick and mortar office, they have to pay all of their own expenses. And so there's a little higher reimbursement for those providers that are not given a facility to operate through, where they have their own overhead expenses. And so during the public health emergency, they said, just where would you normally see the patient? Report a modifier 95. That'll tell us that this visit was performed via audio, video, real-time, live communication with that patient. Now, for the year 2024, new guidance came out because we have a couple of modified place of service codes. One of them is 02, and that says that the patient was seen somewhere else besides their home. They were in another location besides their home. But place of service 10 says that the patient was in their home when the service was happening. And then the modifier 95, many payers are still requiring that to indicate that it was a telehealth, audio, video, face-to-face, real-time visit with that patient. So yes, from a coding and a billing perspective, we needed to make sure we were reporting this correctly. And also that builds the support when they do data mining, these payers do data mining, it builds the support that we're using telehealth services. You know, they're able to capture that.
Yeah. And are non-governmental payers, are they embracing this concept?
Absolutely. Now, I will tell you, non-governmental payers, most of the payers that I've encountered, so your Cignas, your Aetnas, your United Healthcares, they've discontinued telephone, audio-only evaluation and management visits. There was a lot of concern over that one. And CMS has notified us that they'll continue to reimburse it, but only through the end of this year. So yes, we saw commercial payers embrace telehealth, but that audio video component, that face-to-face component.
Yeah. And I can see that because how do you know, unless you can truly recognize the voice, that you are actually speaking to the patient? That can raise a bunch of compliance related issues, which I'm going to pivot now. You're talking, you know, general compliance, but obviously the backbone of compliance programs are the auditing, monitoring components. So as it relates to telehealth, how would you recommend a provider implement auditing and monitoring their telehealth program?
Well, first we have to have a policy that we're going to do telehealth. And lay out how we're going to do telehealth in our organization. So what type of a platform are we using? Who in the organization will be providing telehealth services? Is it our MDs, DOs? Is it our NPs and PAs? Really give a good procedure of how we're going to provide these services. Are we going to have a designated room? Is it in the provider's office? Detail that information. And what type of services are we going to offer via telehealth? Is it just evaluation and management visit? Is it going to be any of the counseling services or annual wellness visits or any of the other services, physical therapies that we're able to do during at this time with telehealth? So lay that out and then review the policies. CMS is great for policies, and most payers out there also have their policies online. How do we integrate their requirements for medical necessity support? How do we integrate their indications for telehealth? And we meet those requirements. Do an education. Talk to the staff that's going to be involved in telehealth, the providers, the clinical staff, the ancillary staff, even the billing staff. Educate them on the policy and the procedure and how we developed that. And then lastly, make sure that we've added to our monitoring and audit calendar. So how often do we audit and monitor? So maybe 30, 45 days after we've implemented our new policy of telehealth, let's go see how we're doing. Is there an opportunity to improve there? And if there is, then let's do that education and come back 30 to 45 days from now. Double check, make sure that we're doing it right. And really, it will flow that easy if we just dedicate ourselves to keeping up with that.
And probably from a HIPAA perspective, you want to also audit the environment in which the encounters is taking place in the physician's facility to make sure that they're not standing in the middle of the nurse's station by way of example, and then doing this visit, because it really needs to be in a secured environment, especially if like you and I are using headsets. But if you're using your speakers from your computer, then anybody around can listen to that encounter. So you probably have to audit and monitor that too, right?
And that should be part of our policy as well. So it would be part of that auditing and monitoring, making sure that our policies followed and their policies followed.
Yeah. And then also probably from a billing perspective, you'd want to monitor, I guess, or audit the application of the modifiers that we talked about.
Well, that will be in our policy as well. We would state that we're going to be part of our billing. Once we've had that encounter happen, it will be coded appropriately as supported in documentation, and the modifiers will be added as supported in documentation. So it has to be an audio, video, has to be documented that way, very easy so that we can follow that along through the billing process as well.
Yes. You know, we've had some recent examples of some violations that have occurred with respect to telehealth. And obviously the pandemic that we had, the government's shelled out billions of dollars for assistance of organizations, including healthcare organizations, to survive the public health emergency. But obviously, anytime the government pays out mighty dollars, there's opportunities to commit fraud. And so not only are there people who are doing the normal fraud and abuse stuff, but there's fraud and abuse that could be related directly to telehealth. And one of the cases I want to reference, Christine, and have you talk a little bit about generally some violations, but I want to reference this because obviously the podcast is called Stark Integrity. This case has a Stark law violation issue, and it's the recent settlement of the Physician Partners of America. And in that case, not only was Physician Partners of America, but also its founder and their former chief medical officer agreed to pay back $24.5 million. Now, part of the Stark Law violation here is that for the ordering of tests, and there were some allegations that tests were not reasonable and necessary, nor were some of these tests even being reviewed by the physician, but in compensation to their employed physicians, they gave a 40% of profits over to the employed physicians, which meant that their compensation varied based upon the volume or value of the referrals that they were submitting. And that obviously violates the Stark Law. This was a qui-tam case. So that was one of the allegations in the case, that the methodology used by paying the 40% of the laboratory referral, which is a designated health service, violated the Stark Law. But there were other, telehealth related issues in this case. So can you elaborate on that?
I wasn't actually involved in this case, but I did read this case just as many of you have out there. And a lot of it was that they were using telehealth visits to create that referral system. And those telehealth visits were not always supported, that they were seeing patients sometimes twice a week via telehealth. And I think it's important to remember, would you have done this before the public health emergency? Would you have used telehealth in that capacity prior to? So that nothing really changed in medicine. It was how we deliver medicine. And I think that was really important there, that there was an overutilization that was in place. And that was one of the things that kind of sparked this case, was that the overutilization caused the referrals, the referral caused the violation of Stark, and kind of snowballed.
Yeah. Because I can see by using this communication vehicle, telehealth, it's easy on the provider side to sit at the desk and have multiple visits back to back. And so I think the whole point is, just like you say, even without the use of telehealth, that visit or that encounter has to be medically necessary. So the medical necessity indicators are not thrown out the window with telehealth. In fact, going back to the compliance issues, they're probably even heightened because of the ease in which an encounter can occur.
I always add a little bit more to that medical necessity, because I come from it from a different perspective. Is it medically necessary for that payer to pay that bill? Not necessarily. Do I feel like my doctor is not doing something in my best interest? I think that my doctor may be doing something in my best interest, but it doesn't always mean that my payer has to pay that bill. It might be that I have to pay that bill today because it's good medicine, but outside of the benefits that my payer has laid out that they'll cover for me.
Yeah, that's the reason why I always think the worst of the use of the word medically necessary is kind of a red herring, because it's medically necessary according to the billing guidelines of that payer, maybe not what is considered being necessary or medically necessary for the patient and physician relationship. I'd rather just say it doesn't conform to our billing rules, but that's not the way they use that.
Yeah. It's not medically necessary for us to pay that bill.
Right. Exactly. Well, you started this by talking about the Jetsons, and that was supposed to be a futuristic cartoon, which I loved. So I want to have you put on your Jetson cap and talk to our listeners to what you think the future of telehealth will be.
I think telehealth is here to stay. I think beyond the public health emergency, it's not possible to put the genie back in the bottle. So I think that telehealth, we will continue to see a lot of these modalities by telehealth. I'm cautious a little bit to make sure that providers know when is it appropriate to have a telehealth visit. Just because we can doesn't mean that we should always. Those aren't my words. I've heard so many wonderful compliance officers repeat those words. Just because we can doesn't mean that we should. So I'm excited that we are moving into a new direction with telehealth, especially in the world of telemental health. What an amazing difference that has made in a lot of people's lives themselves. And also, I'm glad that now we're going to see the reimbursement for those types of services when they're justified.
Yeah. And I also think you think of patients who, just from a pure physical or locale, as you referenced, issues, that it's for the convenience of providing appropriate medical care to certain patient populations. I can see like a nursing home patient that needs to see a specialist versus, the primary care physician going through the nursing home. That would be a great use for it. Or you get into these remote areas. Hopefully the payers are going to see the benefits of the use of telehealth without having these patients drive 2 hours in order to get to a physician office. Do you see any other areas where the governments or the payers should be looking at?
Well, there's quite a few different things. And I talk about this when I talk about telehealth, just a couple of examples. So my husband had to have a total knee replacement a couple of years ago. And he's still kind of a young guy, but he needed this knee replacement. Too many motorcycles, the cranking of the motorcycles. So, there we go. Mm-hmm. But we took this 6'3" man the day after surgery or 2 days after surgery, and we hobbled him out to the car. We shoved him in the car. We drove cautiously to the doctor's office, pulled him, extracted him from the car, up the elevator, into the waiting room, into the exam room. It was literally 30 seconds. Looks great. Okay, I'll see you in 2 weeks. And we had to repeat the process. For my husband, who had no complications whatsoever, that would have been a great telehealth visit. Or when you picked your kids up from school and they're burning with fever, rather than going to urgent care or rather than going to the emergency department after hours, what about a telehealth visit with those providers for those acute things that they're able to easily diagnose? So I think that if we telehealth is going to help us fill some of those gaps there moving forward.
And I don't know if you're a fan of this show, but there's a show out there called My 600-Pound Life. And you see these extremely obese people getting into these vans and the agony to drive to Houston, because the doctor they're going to see is down in Houston. And the doctor spends maybe 5 minutes, at least on the show it shows, the 5 minutes with the patients. But these patients are in excruciating pain in the back of that vehicle driving, you know, states away in order to have that patient encounter. So there's a lot of, you know, those good reasons from the patient's perspective.
A lot of times it's because their insurance isn't going to pay for a telehealth visit, but they'll pay those added expenses of transport or the going to another area to see that provider. It just doesn't make any sense. So I'm very glad telehealth is now having that attention that it really needed to, and the reimbursement as well.
Absolutely. Well, before we get to the three Captain Integrity punch points, is there any other area that we should be discussing that you think would be of interest to our listeners?
Well, I think that all of us should start really getting more involved in using those types of devices to communicate with our providers. I know that, again, there's a lot of electronic medical records out there that do interface with some of our Apple watches or Fitbit watches and are able to transmit some of that information. And maybe having a discussion with your provider of, can they interface and what information would be relevant? How can we use technology to help us manage these conditions?
Yeah, especially with high blood pressure. I mean, I've had kind of borderline high blood pressure. I'm probably giving out PHI now, but borderline high blood pressure. But I get this white coat syndrome when I get into the physician's office. And then, because I view it as a test, and I have got to pass this test. But I had one of these watches that did monitor my blood pressure. It was pretty good. And as we know, blood pressure varies drastically throughout the day. So if you could have hit me at the wrong time with the wrong provider, I could be out of whack and on medicine that I don't need, because that's a single point in time. But these monitoring can kind of level out a more global view of the patient. So I can definitely see that. Now's the time for the three Captain Integrity punch points. So can you provide the three punch points for today?
So we want to remember that telehealth may not be appropriate for all healthcare conditions or situations at that time. So we really need to make sure that we're looking at those unique encounters and seeing which ones would benefit from telehealth, which ones would not benefit from telehealth. If we're using evaluation and management visits, are we really evaluating and managing the patient today? Remember that consent is really important, especially for certain populations that don't really understand that this telephone call or this audio video communication may indeed have a financial responsibility to it. And remember that prevention is key. So work with your compliance team, make sure that your policy and your procedure is up to date, that you've included monitoring your telehealth services in your compliance program, give that education and provide opportunities to be the best telehealth providers out there that you can be.
Yes. Well, Christine, you are definitely a thought leader in this segment of the industry. Why don't you give our listeners your contact information?
Absolutely. Thank you. It is C Hall, H-A-L-L, at Sterling Global Solutions, Sterling with an I, S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G. You can reach us on LinkedIn. We have a very large presence on LinkedIn. Check out our website, join our membership, at least get our newsletter that comes out every month. And we've got a lot of tidbits on new guidance that has come out from the federal payers, new guidance for compliance purposes. And we'll also be there to help you out in case you ever do get an investigation or, hey, maybe you want to proactively have someone come and look at your compliance program so you never have to be on that defensive side. No offense, Bob.
No offense taken. Well, I'm glad we both made our way to Alaska to meet each other. So again, this has been a very great two-part episode. And again, I would like to thank you for participating on Stark Integrity.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Stark Integrity, the Stark Law and Compliance Podcast. If you have any questions regarding this episode, the Stark Law, or healthcare compliance, you can contact me at bobwadecaptainintegrity@gmail.com or my law firm email address at bob.wade@nelsonmullins.com. You can review this and any other episode of Stark Integrity at the Captain Integrity website at captainintegrity.com. You can also follow me on LinkedIn under Bob Wade. I hope the three Captain Integrity punch points will help you with the Stark Law and compliance. In closing, remember that integrity depends on you and me.